Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. And what could be more important than to talk about how we relate to each other across religions, cultures, and across national borders? Perhaps it's also very important for us to imagine how we might talk to ourselves and investigate our relationship to our faith communities, to our national communities, and so on and so forth. Now, to help me in this conversation I have today, my guest is a French philosopher and writer, Abnor Bidar. He is part of the French Ministry of Education, also named to the National Ethics Committee by the French President, Emmanuel Macron. He's also produced and presented a radio show on Islamic culture for French National Radio, and is author of several books, including Self-Islam and Islam Without Submission. Thank you so much, Abnor, for being here. I'm very excited to have you here because it's always an interesting opportunity to speak to people who kind of come out of a different context. You come out of a European context, but with very similar concerns about how do we live in a multicultural society. Now, I was very taken by your open letter to the Muslim world, it was it called. It was a letter penned after the killings at the Charlie Hebdo, a satirical magazine. I want to begin with that call that you had in that for self-examination. You said, why was self-examination rather than any other kind of analysis, social and political and historical analysis, that you thought was most important at that moment?
Yes, I have written this open letter to the Western world and to the Muslim world. There are two directions for my letter, to the Western world and to the Muslim world, because I think that we cross together, all together, many main crises of civilization. And especially at the side of Islam and the side of the Muslims, I think that we are, and you know that, and always know that, we are a very old civilization. We are we have a very ancient religion, and I think that periodically we have to renew our way of thinking. We have to make an effort towards ourselves, an effort of what I call self-criticism, to understand better our old wisdom in a new way, because we face new challenges here, here and now. We face to the ecological crisis. We face to the problem what you called multicultural societies, etc., etc. And I think that for Islam, it is time to integrate itself new in a new way. To be in a good balance between what I call, on the one side, fidelity to our traditions, customs, history, legacy, and at the other side, movement. I think by the idea of movement, I mean the necessity to reconsider some our positions, some our behaviors, some our way of thinking. For example, in a multiculturalism society, what do we need as Muslims, but also the others, to do now? To learn to live really in multicultural societies. Because, as I often say, to be in a multicultural society is not only a sociological fact, as it was already done. We are in multicultural society, we live beside each other. No, we have to learn to for example, mutual understanding, mutual tolerance. We have to resist to the temptation to dominate the others, you know. So we face this kind of new challenges, and according to me, the necessity so is to renew our way of thinking.
Okay, you know, I'm not a scholar of Islam, as you are, and I don't read much about the community, but I guess there is a conversation that all of us are party to about Islam. Now, your assertion that there's a need for self-examination, is there a paucity, a real lack of self-examination in the Islam, in the Muslim world today? How do you make that assertion? What is it that makes you think that this is true?
Oh, I don't pretend that it's true. The function of the philosopher is to ask questions. And after that, everyone with his own freedom and judgment can choose to take the question or to consider the question is not the good one. But what I observe at the side of the Muslim consciousness or the Muslim world, the Muslim societies or communities, is that often we obey mechanically to the tradition. It is what in Arabic we call taqlid. I think that we have to give generation after generation a new, also in Arabic, niyyah, a new intention in what we do. And it is what I call self-criticism, self-examination. What is the meaning today for our beliefs? What is the meaning today for our practices? What is the goal? Of course, I can explain to my children, so, you are Muslims, the goal for you is to gain a reward in the hereafter. But in the contemporary world, it will not be sufficient. My children will say, but I don't care about the hereafter. What I care is my life, my now life, my life in this world, in this epoch. So, what will I answer? What can be the goal of spiritual life? For example, today, when you speak to young people, not only Muslims, but Muslims especially, they say, I want to be free. I want to express myself. I want to express my identity. So, how the expression of the identity can be a new sort of spiritual life? I ask this kind of questions.
I do want to say that, you know, I'm kind of describing that context with the killings of Charlie Hebdo. You said there were Muslims who were saying, this is not us, this is not Islam. They denied it, they distanced themselves from it, right? And of course, there are all these other types of, just as you see, say, well, you know, the religions have been hijacked politically, or this is not, the problems of extremism is not uniquely a Muslim problem, or that, you know, it's a result of a social concept of exclusion, or it's a result of a colonial experience. Why are those frameworks equally important?
So, when the terrorist attacks happened in Paris, my function as a Muslim thinker in the French society was to explain two kind of things to the French Muslim, to the French not Muslim, and to the French Muslims. To the French who are not Muslims, I repeated week after week that is not Islam. Islam is not terrorism. Islam is not by nature or by essence a religion of intolerance, violence, etc. It was very important to convince the French public that Islam is innocent from this terrorist attack. But at the other side, I explained to the Muslims that we should think to the reason why these terrorists have hit France in the name of Islam, in the name of Islam. And I think that there are in the Islamic community today some temptations or some pulsions of dogmatism, of very rigorous attitudes that can bring the individuals, some individuals, into a very fanatic view. And for me, it is what we have to take care as Muslims.
Okay, we'll take a short break now. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. My guest today is Abnur Bidar. He's a French philosopher and writer, author of several books, including Self-Islam and Islam Without Submission. It's got a subtitle on something about existentialism, isn't it? And that seems to be very clear in your work as well. I do with that letter, coming back to the letter, which I found fascinating. Now, this is like 4 years ago, but I think it's still very important. You talk about a spiritual crisis, a general spiritual crisis, but you also talk about a crisis within the Islamic world, or within Muslim society. And you use very, very interesting language, the language of disease, the language of the body, of innards. And I wonder about that. I mean, what were you talking about when you said, because it then seems a bit more like an essentialist type of discourse, right? What exactly, why did you use such language, disease, illness, so on?
Because it was the way to show how deep is our spiritual crisis. I think that there are two dimensions of this spiritual crisis. There is a spiritual crisis at the side of the religions, not especially Islam, according to me. And the meaning of this spiritual crisis is that our very old religions, for them, it is very hard to adapt themselves, to adjust themselves to the challenges of the contemporary world. I noticed that not only at the side of Islam, but Christianism, Judaism, we repeat always the same dogmas, but we don't do the effort to renew them. And at the other side, the spiritual crisis is for me the crisis that came from the Western world, from the beginning of the secularism, from the what we called in Europe the Enlightenment. Enlightenment perhaps on the political plan, but on the spiritual plan, we have completely lost most of our spiritual legacies. So at this side, we are living in what I often call deserts of meaning, deserts of existential and spiritual resources for the individual. And when I observe the young generation, I see that they are prisoned in a closed alternative. They can choose to follow the old discourses of the religion, but they feel that it is not very adapted to their situation and to their will of freedom. They don't want to obey, they want to choose. So they have a problem with religions that are essentially dogmas. And at the other side, in the modern way of life, consumerism, nihilism, materialism, they don't feel any answer, any answer to their existential questions, spiritual questions. So in my work, in all my work as a philosopher, I try to open what I call a third way, to help a young consciousness today to be able to find a spiritual life, a kind of spiritual life that is correctly adapted to the contemporary world.
Okay, you use an expression, and it seems very kind, yes, of an existentialist kind of a syntax. They dare not grant their own conscience the right to question. Now, what does it mean to say that? That people, it's not about external controls. You're talking about an internal situation where people don't give themselves freedom.
Yes.
What is that? How does that really operate? And how do you work through that?
Yes, I'll take an example. The most concrete example for us who belong to the Muslim culture and faith. When I do my prayer, my daily prayer, I have five times of prayer. Will I do it mechanically? Just because it's the law? Just because it's the tradition? I think that we need to feel that we can put inside a real sense, a real meaning, a real personal, what I call niya, intention. It is this kind of questions. If the prayer is only to obey the tradition, to obey the habits of my society, of my culture, what will be the interest, the real interest for me? So it is what I called a Muslim existentialism. It is quite strange. Because, you know, we have had a French philosopher whose name was Jean-Paul Sartre, who said the existentialism is the willing of the individual to live by himself, and to think by himself, and to find his own reasons to do or not to do things. But Jean-Paul Sartre said that the existentialism was atheistic. I don't agree. I don't agree. We can have a spiritual existentialism, us Muslims, for example, because when we do our practices, when we do spiritual exercises, we can bring in them a very singular intention. From the question, what do I need for my spiritual life? And in what spirit, in what aim will I do this prayer? It is, as I said before, only to gain a reward in the hereafter, or
But yeah, and so this is what fascinates me because, you know, I'm not religious. I consider myself an atheist. And I studied a bit of existentialism. So when I think about religious traditions, often people give over to a divine plan,
yes,
to God, to all, you know, and all these other entities control over their lives. They willingly give it over. And submission is often it's the way that we code religions, including Islam, right? And
yes,
your book is, in fact, called Islam Without Submission. So it's very interesting. How did you,
yes,
bring that? I mean, do you ever get accused of bringing a kind of French thinking into Islam, that you're somehow innovating in ways that are not allowable?
No, not at all, not at all. It is provocative. It is provocative to say Islam without submission, because often Muslims consider that Islam is submission to God. But I often said, do you want that God wants slaves? No, at the contrary, when you read the Quran, for example, you find verses and surahs in which God gives to the human being a great responsibility in the universe. So what is responsibility? Is freedom also. We have, as human beings, to do choices. So I don't consider religion as a matter of submission, but a matter of consecration. Consecration of yourself to some ideals or to some values, or for example, towards God, because you consider that it is the most important. But I think, and it is my main principle in the spiritual life, that everyone has to be the master of his own choices. He has to be free. You want to be atheistic. You want to be a believer of each religion. You want to have a spiritual life without any religion. For example, many people today choose mindfulness, practices of meditation, yoga, etc., etc. It is a question of self-responsibility. And self-responsibility is exactly what I call self-criticism. Self-criticism towards a mechanical obedience, and self-criticism which will conduct me to interrogate myself, who I am and who and what do I want.
Okay. Another short break. I will be right back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad. With me, Abdul Bidar. He's a French writer and a philosopher. Abdul, the question of crisis again, we'll come back to it. You characterize many Muslim societies as lacking democracy, unable to deal with gender equality, lacking the ability to separate religion from instruments of state, and also lacking in tolerance. Now, when you in your essay refer to kind of leading the way and Islam contributing to this conversation of dealing with the spiritual crisis, you say we must do it or lead these reforms according to universal principles, freedom of consciousness, democracy, tolerance, and rights of citizenship. It seems very European, seems very Enlightenment,
Yes.
So what is the specificity of the Islamic message to this crisis?
We are in the global world. So it is natural that today we have mutual influences. So I don't consider that the Western way of thinking, that the Western secularism will contaminate Islam as if it was a disease, you know, a contagious disease. No, I think that we can consider as Muslim that there is something to take in the Western culture, for example, democracy, but not as something that is completely exterior to us, not as a contamination, and not as something that has no way with our own worldview. Why? When you read the most sacred Islamic texts, I think, for example, to the text of some Sufis like Ibn Arabi, how do they consider the universe? They consider the universe as a spiritual democracy. Why a spiritual democracy? Ibn Arabi, for example, you know, the great Sufi master of the 13th century, said the universe is a tree, the tree of the manifestation of God. So each individual on the tree is a part of the divine existence. So they're all individual in their dignity are equal. So it is what I call a spiritual democracy. And I think that there can be a meeting, a great meeting between this political sense of democracy that is coming from Europe and the spiritual sense of democracy that comes from Islam. As Muslims, we consider our ummah, the community of the Muslims, and it is a part, a very important part of the message of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It was to say that all humans are equals. It is manifested symbolically in the prayer when the rich is beside the poor and behind the beside the rich and beside the poor. So if we are not only tolerant, but if we take the democracy from the Western world, it is not something that is foreign, stranger for us, but something that encounter our own genius of democracy.
You know, what I do find fascinating about you is your willingness to kind of deal with this as a series of ideas, right, add your history. But many people approach their religion as if it was outside of history. That what is given is immutable. It came at it's almost pointless to talk about history and when Islam emerges and the context of it emerges. It is outside of history. How do you counter arguments that say our religions don't have to conform to this commonsensical notion of sharing ideas and doing better?
One of my main arguments is very simple and I think very clear. It is if Islam's doesn't enter in the history, it will become more and more weak. Because when you lose the sense of history, when you want to stay in an eternal sphere, so we are humans, it is impossible. And the progress of the humanity will let us at the side of the road. So I think that the only way for Muslims and for the Islamic civilization to be respected by the others is to have a logic of contribution to the human progress. And so we can stay at the level, at the plan of our eternal certitudes. We have to care about the most contemporary problems. For example, what is the position of Islam about ecology, ecologic crisis? What is the position of Islam about the bioethical problems? You know, for example, what is the position of Islam about artificial intelligence? If us Muslims were not able to answer this question, to bring our contribution to these problems, no one will take care about us.
But there's also, and this is, you see this in Christianity and the end of times theology, a real rejection of the world, this belief that actually it doesn't matter if we lead this planet into ecological crisis, because there is going to be the rapture and everybody's going to be sprung up into heaven.
Yes.
And if you take that view, and it seems a very popular apocalyptic view of humanity, how do you respond to that?
If people are convinced that we go to an apocalypse and it is the will of God, what can I say? I'm only a philosopher, and I respect the conviction of the others. But I think that I am listened by many Muslims, by many, especially young Muslims, who understand well that it is not the only way to answer to the modern challenge, to get a refuge in old certitudes. So I have no illusion. I have no illusion. Some people will stay convinced by very old dogmas, traditions, and representations of existence, of sense, of history, etc. But I also know by my experience of talking with many, many Muslims that we are numerous to wait another kind of answers.
Okay. Finally, a quick thought on Malaysia. You've been here and you've had some dialogues. Do you see something special in the Malaysian conversation about Islam that you could bring back to Europe?
Many interrogations. And for me, it was a kind of mirror of the French situation, because we are both in multicultural societies. And from one multicultural to another multicultural society, it's the same issues. So when I will go back in France, my conviction will be that we have to talk much together.
Okay, thank you so much for being
with
me.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Abdur Bidar. He's a French philosopher and writer. He's also presented a radio show on Islamic culture on French National Radio, and his books include Self-Islam and Islam Without Submission. That's all we have for Let's Talk today. I'm Sharad Kutin, only for Astro Wani. Thank you very much.